Welcome, everyone. I'm Warren Giroux of Sightline Wealth Management. Today, I'm here with Nick Capriano of River Rock Mortgage Investment Company, distributed by the Nine Point Partners Group. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you very much.
It's been a while since we last spoke. So for our listeners and our new listeners, can you give us a quick overview of your fund, like the size of your loan book, the type of loans you do, the number of loans that you may have, and the geographic location of those loans?
Sure. So River Rock Mortgage Investment Corporation is a residential lender. We lend exclusively on residential properties. About 93-94% of our book is owner occupied. The balance would be rentals. We only lend in Ontario, and we only lend in urban suburban areas in Ontario. We don't lend on small towns. We don't lend on rural properties. We focus on highly marketable properties. Our basic underlying philosophy is bad things happen to good people all the time. They get sick, they lose their job, they die, they get divorced. But the house is the constant. So if you always have the house right and the value right and the marketability right, you can kind of withstand any kind of crisis that the borrowers or the economy may have. So we put a tremendous amount of underwriting time into the real estate and exit strategies just in case bad things happen. Our portfolio consists of 80% of first mortgages currently, and the balance are second mortgages. If we do a second, we only go behind a bank. We won't go behind another private lender or a private lender individual. And the portfolio size currently is about $186 million. And our average loan is $340,000 approximately. And the portfolio has been performing extremely well. Our arrears are 0.001. percent at the end of last month.
So what would your LTV be on the loan book?
Our average loan to value is 68%. We will lend up to 80%. However, the average is at 68.
So you say your term, your mortgage is on average is like 1 year?
Yeah, our maximum term is 1 year. We do offer some 6 month terms, but the vast majority of the book is a 1 year term. We don't do anything longer than that. We always say we're a parking lot. People come to us because they have an issue of some sort that prevents them from going to a bank. So they come to us for 1, 2, 3 years to kind of get back on track, and then they go back to the bank.
So I take it when you say they come to you for 1 to 2, 3 years, every year they have to roll the loan over into a new loan.
Correct. They have to sign a renewal and go through a review process before they get the renewal.
So you say at one time, I know your book was primarily in the GTA area. Have you branched out a little beyond that now?
Yeah, we'll do. I think about 2% of the book is in Ottawa. I think about we'll go as far north as Collingwood. So we'll do some stuff in Barrie. We probably got about 10-11% out in the Kitchener-Waterloo, London area. And then we also do a fair bit in the greater Hamilton, all the way to Niagara. We kind of go east to basically Bowmanville, and then we kind of stop, and then we jump over to Ottawa. We don't do any kind of really Belleville, Kingston. We would look at it if it was in a subdivision, but we just don't see that type of business for one reason or another.
Is there any type of borrower that sort of is a trend in your business? I mean, are these people who have businesses, are they typically self-employed, or are they working for major companies and run into, as you say, a medical problem or a difficulty with a divorce or something?
Yeah, so they generally fall into three categories. One category would be they fail the stress testing at the banks. So for example, you know, you can get a mortgage today for 2.5% at the bank. However, you have to qualify at 5.3%, or that might have gone up to 5.5% after this rate increase. So even though they're getting a 2.5% rate, they have to qualify for that 5.3. So some people don't make that. So they have to come to us. So that's one group. Another group would be self-employed individuals that can't prove all their income. You know, they write down their car, they write off part of their houses for business and all sorts of other things. And because of that, the banks just look at the bottom line. They don't kind of add back things back in. So self-employed is another big feature. And then the next group would be, you know, soft or poor credit, where they have a reasonable explanation, maybe their interruption in their income or an illness or a death or a divorce. And if the deal makes sense and we like the real estate, we can look at those types of deals also.
Okay. So on origination, who originates your loans? Do you use outside originators or do you generate everything internally?
So currently the vast majority of our business comes to us through licensed mortgage brokers and licensed mortgage agents. So that's how we get the bulk of our business currently. About 6 months ago, we created a new company, which is our direct-to-consumer business. We call it Custom Capital Lending. And we've been advertising on the radio. This month, we started a billboard campaign into strategic areas that we feel that'll make an impact. We also do Facebook ads, Instagram ads, and then Google AdWords. So we're finding that's getting a bit of an uptick in business going direct to consumer. And we have a group that just deals with that exclusively. And after 6 months, we're starting to see some traction on that. So that's been very positive.
Okay. So basically you have 100% turnover every year.
Are you talking about the mortgages?
And the mortgage book, yeah.
No, you probably have somewhere between 30 to 40% payout every year.
Okay.
Because, you know, some people, it takes longer than a year to solve their problems, right? Or some people realize it's too much and they just sell the house or what have you. But we have about 30 to 40% churn every year.
Yeah. How strong is the pipeline out there now? I mean, we've gone through COVID. It looks like we're coming out the other side. Mm-hmm. And the economy is still showing some strength. So what's the real estate market been like, or the demand been like for the mortgage business?
Yeah, so, you know, there's not a lot of listings right now. This is March of 2022. So listings, you know, January and February listings were down. March, there's haven't got up yet. Usually you'll find that after the spring break for kids in school, listings will start to pick up because people generally like to buy in, you know, end of March, April, May for closings in end of June when kids finish school. That's when they like to move, obviously, in the summer. So they want to be as least disruptive as possible to the family. But refinances are always a big part of the business, right? Debt consolidation, people wanting to put money into their businesses, investment purposes, what have you. So, you know, refinance business is always a steady stream of business. And then purchases are a nice stream of business. You know, that goes up and down based on what's happening. The other advantage we have is when things are very busy, you know, so first of all, you have the banks, they're the first tier, but then the next tier would be the regulated alternative lenders, would be like a home trust, an Equitable Bank, a community trust. But the problem is that they can't turn deals around quickly. Like they say, if you submit a deal, it takes 2 weeks to get an approval, 3 weeks to fund, where we can underwrite and close within 24 hours. So that really gives us an advantage on a lot of deals, because what will happen is the deal will go in, take 2 weeks to get approved, it'll get declined, and then they'll go somewhere else and then get declined again, and then they're getting down to the wire. So we'll get a lot of deals that are quick closings, which we're able to accommodate.
So who does your appraisals at a 24-hour turnaround? You must have internal appraisers, or do you use external?
Yeah, so we use third-party appraisers. We have an approved appraiser list that they have to follow. And so they're independent, full reports with narrative, pictures, comparables, the whole bit. And what we do is usually on these quick closings, they come with an appraisal. So if they have a home trust, if they've gone to home trust or Equitable or community first, They've already got the appraisal. Our approved appraiser list is the same as those three companies. So it generally is not a problem.
Okay, so it's more of a due diligence on the individual himself.
Right, and then we have a triple check methodology, a proprietary model that we developed on the appraisals and real estate. So, you know, we, like I said, our philosophy is bad things happen to good people. So part of our underwriting process is our exit strategy. So if it goes bad, we know what all the friction costs are, and we reverse engineer those numbers and we work it out. That's why in 8 years and 3,000 mortgages, we've never lost any money.
So going through COVID, I'm just curious, if you didn't lose any money, how did your portfolio handle COVID? It sounds like it weathered the storm quite well.
Yeah, we came out very aggressive. So as everybody's aware, the banks advertised that they would do payment deferrals up to 6 months. Not everybody got 6 months. Everybody just thought it was just a blanket. Everybody got 6 months, but you had to apply to the bank to get the deferrals. So people, you know, got anywhere from 2 to 6 months, not necessarily the 6 months. Our philosophy was a little different. Our philosophy was we wanted to keep borrowers engaged. So they had to make some sort of payment. So if they could provide, you know, if they were self-employed or if they were in an industry that we knew for a fact was impacted by COVID, we would work on a payment plan for them. So if their payment was $1,000 a month, we'd say, okay, every other week, you got to pay $350. We would want them to keep engaged because, you know, I find with the more you keep them engaged, the smoother things go. So when people would call, we would say, we'll get back to you. We would look at the numbers. We would work it backwards. We would immediately email them all the links to get government assistance. So we would say, okay, this is the proposal that we're willing to work with you. And here are all the links that you can contact to apply for government assistance. So we were on it pretty quick. And because of that, you know, we always kept things under control because we kept people engaged and we were on people so fast.
Yeah. I guess another question is regarding interest rates. We're starting to see interest rates rise in the last, well, let's call it 3 to 6 months. Right. And we certainly anticipate rates going a lot higher. Mm-hmm. In your experience in this business, I know, you know, typically in this particular sort of iteration of your career, we haven't really seen rising interest rates for very long. If they've only been, you know, maybe momentarily. But it certainly looks like the trend is turning now. So what is your experience in this market in a rising rate environment in historical?
Yeah, so I've been through lots of rising rate experiences. In the early 80s, when rates went to 20, 21%, I was still in school, but my family was very involved in real estate at that time. So I saw the impacts of those rates. And then I was working when, you know, from 89 to 95, interest rates went from 8% to 15% over that period of time. So I've experienced, you know, the rapid increase of rates and the impact of that. What I find is, you know, you need multiple triggers for values to drop. So if you looked at the early 90s, from 89 to 95, residential values in Ontario dropped around 25%. Commercial values dropped 50% approximately. And back then you had multiple triggers. You had rates go from 8 to 15%. You had manufacturers leaving Ontario because of high provincial taxes going to the southern states of Mexico. You had mass speculation in real estate. The rules were much different then. You could start pre-selling building condominium buildings and get construction financing without any pre-sales. So, and you could buy a unit with $500 down and you wouldn't have to have money until closing. So people wouldn't buy one unit, they'd buy five units when they shouldn't even have been buying one unit because they thought they'd be able to flip it by the time it closed, which obviously didn't happen. They changed the rules around condominiums now that you have to have 70% pre-sold before you can get construction financing. And people purchasing condos have to put up 10 to 20% in the first 6 months of purchasing. So, you know, it's changed the dynamics of speculation. So I think that interest rates do have a factor. When rates go up, you know, we get busier, obviously, because less people qualify at the banks. People are very resourceful, I find. Even when rates were high, people can keep it together. They change their lifestyle. They take on a second job. They take on a boarder or a tenant. You know, I've read it that, you know, January, they were predicting something like 150 to 175 basis points increase. I don't think it's going to be that much, to be perfectly honest with you. A lot of this inflation is based on the inability to get product for various reasons. Supply and demand is really more the issue than anything else. But I think that I don't see it having that much of an impact. Like even at today, you know, you can get a mortgage for 2.5%. You add 100 basis points, that's 3.5%. That's still pretty cheap money. When you factor in inflation, it's free money, actually. So rates are still very, very cheap. You know, anything under 5 is really, really cheap. So I don't get overly concerned. You know, I always say it's a hierarchy of debt. Your house is at the top of the pyramid. So that's what you're going to keep together the most. And if you run into some speed bumps in life, and everything else will fall into secondary position.
So what trends do you see in the real estate market in Toronto? I know everybody's been talking about, or people have been asking, is it ever going to correct? Is it, you know, how long can it continue to go up? What are you seeing? What are you thinking?
Yeah, so the real estate market always has ebbs and flows. It never goes in a straight line up forever, and it never goes in a straight line down forever. There's always ebbs and flows. So I think there's a couple of things going on. You know, what I saw was, you know, some markets overshot more than others. Like I don't look at the market as the market and say, oh, they're going to go down, they're going to go up. We really drill down into areas. So for example, that Durham region, that Oshawa, Pickering, Ajax, Whitby area. So at the beginning of the pandemic, it was probably the most affordable housing out there. And then all of a sudden, in last year, people realized how affordable the housing was in the Durham region compared to everywhere else. And there was a massive influx of people buying up the houses and bidding on these houses. And it really got ahead of itself. It overshot, I personally think. So I could see in the Durham region, the second half of this year, maybe a 10% pullback in values in that area. I saw the same thing happen in Vaughan at the end of 2016, beginning of 2017, where Vaughan got kind of overrun, like multiple offers, the values were going up too fast. And then in the second half of 16, values backed off in the Vaughan area about 10-15%. So these things happen. So it's very important to watch these trends and where things are going, you know, what things are being listed for, what they're selling for, how many days on market. One of the things that you can watch for on a market is when a market's flat and it starts to heat up, it generally heats up from the city core and works its way out the province to the smaller areas. That's why it's important, though, even though we don't lend in these outer areas, we still track them because that is your first indication that the market's softening. So when the market starts to soften, it softens outward and works its way inward. That's one of the ways you can start to see it coming. So in the GTA, you know, we'll know it's coming when we start looking at these other areas like Sudbury and Thunder Bay and Huntsville and all these things. When they start to soften, and these outlying areas, when they start to soften, you know it's eventually going to hit the GTA. So these are the things that you got to watch for all the time.
Okay, that makes sense. Is there anything else that you think our listeners should know about your fund or about the industry or?
Well, a couple things. Like we lend in Ontario exclusively. We don't lend in other provinces. The main reason for that at this particular time is Ontario is the most lender-friendly province in Canada. In mortgage lending, time is of the essence, right? So in Ontario, if somebody defaults, you can start a legal action at day 16 in arrears, and by 120 days, you'll have vacant possession of that house. You can list it, sell it, move quite quickly. In Western Canada, they use a foreclosure process. It takes about 12 months just to get permission from a judge to list the house. And judges are very sympathetic and empathetic with homeowners. So if they go and request more time, they generally get it. Maritimes uses Old English law from the 1800s. It's a bit slow and laborious. Quebec uses a civil law. It's slow. It's frustrating. So it's not easy to move people along. But Ontario has that advantage. So, and the reality is, Ontario is more than 50% of the whole Canadian real estate market, right? So That's one thing. The other thing, when you look at the MIC landscape, you know, it's quite a different group. So if you look at, I always say it's kind of broken into two groups, right? You look at the commercial type mix, like Bromspan Investments or a Firm Capital or an Atrium. These are been around a long time, very sophisticated management teams. They'll do mezzanine financing on condominiums, construction loans, infrastructure loans. Like they're very sophisticated. But when you get into the residential mix space, it's quite a different landscape. The vast majority of the mix were started by mortgage brokers, and they just saw this as a complement to their mortgage broker business. If you look at the bios of these people, they've never worked for an institution before. They have no credit risk experience, no underwriting experience, operational risk experience. And it's quite important. Like I always say, just because I eat in a restaurant doesn't mean I know how to run a restaurant. So what happens is it creates some problems in the space because these people don't really know what they're doing. And, you know, the market has corrected most of the mistakes over the last few years. So I always say, like, one of the signs is you look at these MIC websites and they don't list the management team or their bio. So that's when you invest in a MIC, you're investing in the management team, right? So if you're hiding the management team and their bios, that's a flag to me. The other thing, some of these companies are, you know, they're reporting losses every year. Like in this market, like why would they be reporting losses? And some of them are significant, like 100 basis points. Like, I don't understand how you'd be reporting losses like that in this environment. So these are the things that people need to look for. Like there's not a lot of people in the residential mix space that have a real institutional background.
Regarding the losses, when you've had a default in the past, has there ever been a default that actually cost your fund over the last 8 or 9 years any money?
No, actually, our default department is a profit center because we charge fees. So not only do we get all of our interest and principal back, but we also make fees on those situations and those workouts. So we find that they've been a profit center for us.
Oh, wow. That's pretty interesting.
Part of the reason is that we're very aggressive, right? If somebody bounces a payment, we phone them, we email them, and then we send them a couriered letter. We don't send a registered letter because if they're not home, they leave a card and say you have to go to the post office. They don't go. So by day 16, if they haven't responded to our emails, phone calls, and our couriered letter, we start the legal action right away. Usually when they get the letter from the lawyer, they respond very quickly. We don't let anybody go beyond 30 days in arrears. Our attitude is if their payment's $1,000 a month and they couldn't make the $1,000 payment, how are they going to come up with $2,000? So we move on them very quickly and aggressively. And if we put somebody in legal action, I find like if in that situation, 97% self-correct within 30 to 90 days because they know we're serious.
Okay. This is sort of a, I don't know. I asked this question just for general information, what kind of return can investors expect going into 2022 or throughout 2022 on their investment?
So our RF class shares paying 7%. Our target yield is 7%. If they do the drip, I think they end up with 723, 724. The other thing that's different than our MIC than anybody else's is that we pay out the target yield first to investors and we take our management fee second. So if there's any kind of shortage, we eat it out of our management fee. So in past years, there's been some interest rate drag, you know, where we're sitting on cash that we haven't been able to deploy, but we still have to pay the target yield out. We'll eat that interest rate out of our management fee. So that's different than everybody else, because everybody else basically, if there's an interest rate drag or something such as that or cost, they take it out of the investor target yield and keep their management fee first.
Okay. Have you noticed any trends regarding redemptions and inflows?
Yeah, well, we've got lots of inflows. Our redemptions haven't been that large at all. Like this month, I think we only had $225,000 in redemptions, which wasn't much at all. We set a target for new investor money with 9 points every month, and every month we fill it. So we haven't had a problem with redemptions, and people seem to be very positive about putting money into the fund.
So let me just ask a question. If you were to have a run on redemptions, for example, do you have any kind of a credit facility or a line of credit?
We have a line of credit that can facilitate that.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that pretty well wraps it up, Nick. I want to thank you for taking the time, as always. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to the next time.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.